Well, good morning, everybody. Let's see, it's May 1st. No, May 2nd. I'm looking at my calendar at my computer screen, and it's 10 o'clock. And so for the next 2 hours, we're going to talk about car-related problems, and you're welcome to join us anytime you want, 602-508-0960. Give us your name. We're not going to ask you for your address or anything, and tell us what kind of car you have, and then talk about the symptoms. Or perhaps the conversation starts out with, I was told I needed this done, or something to that effect, or here's what my husband said, and here's what my brother said. Those kinds of things we can help you deal with, and that's what we do best, is just kind of sift through the symptoms. The symptoms are pretty important, just because they have everything to do with what's going on. And the primary driver typically has the best symptoms and has the best analysis for the symptoms. So that's kind of how it works. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Folks, I don't recommend shops that I wouldn't send my mother to. Kurtz is one of those. If she lived up near I-17 and Bell Road, I'd say, Mom, go there. It's closer than I am. Kurtz has been around for a very long time, since 1987. I know Kurtz. I have his cell phone number. He's got ASC certified technicians, and I know that he does a great job. Not too long ago, I sent a lady that had been told she needed a motor by two different shops, and the estimate was between $4,000 and $6,000. She didn't have any engine noise. That's a key right there. No engine clatter. So I had to drive it up to Kurtz. Said, ask him what's going on. He replaced the oil pressure switch. The gauge came up and started responding, and he sent her out the door. So saved her a whole lot of money. I bet that repair, probably diagnostic oil pressure switch and the labor to replace it, might have been $150. May have been. So if you're up near I-17 and Bell and you're looking for a good shop, then Kurtz would be a good place. When it comes to self-defense for car expense, it's kind of important that we kind of separate out. And I think both women and men would do well to talk to the technician, or not the technician, but the service writer, in this kind of fashion. It starts out with, Mrs. Salem, thank you for bringing your car in, and we got the emissions test problem fixed. But we did also know that you have, you're due for a fuel injection flush, and we noticed that your brake fluid is also not been changed. So the total of those two things is about $350, and while it's here, would you like us to take care of it? And then Mrs. Salem says, I'm not with the car right now, but would you do me a favor, and would you pull the manual on my car and then just kind of read me in the maintenance schedule where it says that I'm due for a fuel injection flush or a brake fluid flush? That's a really hard question to ask. First of all, they're never going to do it. Now, I'm talking about dealerships, independent stores, and chain stores, and mom-and-pop stores. That covers everybody. So, but if it's somebody who only, some service writer that only has three or four or five cars on his desk, he probably is going to go get the manual. If the service writer has 10 or 15, probably not. Then we move to the second question. Please ask the technician what symptoms he's going to fix by flushing my fuel injectors. That's easy. That's a phone call to the technician. Hey, what did you see? What did you feel? But that's a really tricky question, because if they come back and they say, well, we're going to fix the rough idle in your car, and you say to yourself, there's no rough idle in my car. It's idle as smooth as glass. Then that helps you decide. Then you can say to them, please put down on my repair order what exactly I'm due for, based on my owner's manual, and then also put the pricing there, and then just put your name and your extension so I can deal with you when I call back. That's a killer question. That's you know, show me in my manual, refer to the page, dog ear the page, or tell me what it is that you want to do, and then tell me what symptoms you're going to fix. Now, a fuel injection flush has specific symptoms. And they better say, you need a fuel injection flush, and I'm pretty sure this is going to correct your rough idle. That's what I'm going to do first. Then I have plan B and plan C. Clean your throttle blades up and look at the idle air control motor. And you can say, well, can we do the most predominant one first? Yes, we can. So those are the kinds of things. What symptom are you? Do I have now that you're going to fix. And then when you talk to them, you must insist that they give you a total dollars estimate. The reason why I say to do that is all of us have shop supplies and environmental charges and shop supplies, environmental charges, plus the parts and the labor. Here's the problem. The problem is that significant? I mean, sales tax is 10%. So right off the bat, it takes a $3,000 repair to $3,300. So you look at that and go, wow. We also have shop supplies, which is a derivative of either the parts or the labor. And then we have environmental services, which is a derivative of typically the parts. But it could be parts and labor. Now, most shops, the shop supplies and the environmental charges just attack one line item. But in some shops, they take both. So if you have an oil change, you have an environmental charge. The environmental charge is a percentage of, in this case, of the labor, because we have to get rid of your old oil filter and your old oil. So they're kind of tied together. So then you say to them, I need to call my brother in Denver. He owns a dealership, and I'm going to just consult with him. I'm going to ask him, I guess, you know, you and I have talked about it. I'm going to ask him, they say that I'm due for a fuel injector flush. Tell me what you think about that. Or you say, they tell me that I'm due for a brake fluid flush. Tell me what you think about that. Those are really important things that you can do. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't make any difference. It's just a matter of trying to get from the person you're talking to the information that you need. Let's go over a couple of those real quick. A fuel injection flush, in my opinion, is what we're doing is flushing your wallet. But it is a valid operation if we've got a rough idle and we think we can cure it with a fuel injection flush. If there is a symptom that matches the fuel injection flush, then it's valid. But just to flush your injectors so that your car will love you more is not going to happen. And if you don't have a symptom, then you don't need it. That's all there is to it. As far as a brake fluid flush, we have a couple of ways to test the brake fluid. First of all, we can check it for moisture, and too much moisture indicates that we need to flush it. And sometimes, and I'm going to use the extremes here, I'm going to use clear water, iced tea, a weak iced tea, a heavy iced tea, and then a dark chocolate martini. So you can see that there's a light, a middle, and a real heavy dark. Most of us, we're never going to see light. We're never going to see clear. We're never going to see water. But we're going to see a weak iced tea. Most of us know that nobody cares. Another thing you can do on a small shop is say to the owner, let's walk outside and look at, well, take me to my car and let's look at what the brake fluid looks like. And then they do. And then you say, okay, well, I want to see your car. How do you get past that? And all you're doing is trying to test their honesty in a nice way. But in reality, those that play by the rules are more than happy to develop your trust. Those that aren't are going to come up with an excuse why they can't. Who's on the first line?
That would be David.
David, good morning.
Good morning. Okay, my son-in-law has a 2014 Dodge 350 or a one-ton diesel. His check engine light starts coming on intermittently, so he took it into a place, and they said it needs a new turbo for $8,000.
Okay.
So I'm looking for a recommendation on a second opinion place in Queen Creek for a Dodge.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a couple questions first. Does he notice any drivability concerns?
No.
Okay, so it has all the power and a good quality idle that it had before.
Yes.
Okay. Did the shop, no names, please. Did the shop you go to, was that a dealer, was that an independent or a chain?
Independent shop.
Okay. Here's at first blush. If the turbo needed to be replaced, there would be a substantial loss in power. A noticeable loss of maybe even 50 or higher percent. You said the check engine light comes on and off. That means the problem is intermittent.
It's apparently a boost control module.
Okay. Well, we can have all kinds of boost problems, and we got sensors that determine air in and air out. So one of those sensors is bad, and for instance, just using stupid numbers here, air going in is 8 and air coming out is 28. So if one of those two sensors is lying, then the computer has a tough time. Now, I think there's a 10% chance you need a turbo.
2 minutes.
That's what I think. I think there's a 90% chance you don't. I don't have anybody south of the 60, and I'm embarrassed to tell you that we do diesels, and we have a whole diesel performance department, and I think they're going to charge you somewhere in the vicinity of $125 plus or minus to tell you exactly what it is. And we're certainly capable of doing that. So you're welcome to do that. Salem Boys Auto in Tempe, I-10 and Warner Road. If you're going to wait for it, you need to tell them you're going to wait for it, but it's a bad idea. It's a good idea to just arrange to leave it there. And we have a master tech, Adam, who works strictly on diesels. Alan, my son, runs the diesel division. I drive a 12 one-ton 6.7 diesel like yours. And we make those diesels run faster and stronger and better. However, that's not what your son needs right now. You need a diagnosis. I want you to look at the engine code, and I want you to diagnose why it's there and call me with an estimate. And by the way, how much is your checkout fee? That's the conversation you should have.
Okay.
All righty. So
I'll call Monday and make an appointment with your daughter.
Yeah, you can do Andy or Alan or anybody who answers the phone can make. And basically you're going to say, I got a diesel, got a check engine light, and I want you guys to tell me why.
Okay.
All right. Good enough. Thank you, David. And that's really how easy it is. Kind of embarrassing to talk about my own shop because I can go years without naming my shop. But unfortunately, in this particular geographical area, we don't necessarily have anybody that I would recommend because they're not on my list of best car repair shops. And those guys have been vetted where the rest of the shops haven't. So I'm not belittling anybody. I'm just saying the one I can trust that will be fair to you is unfortunately me. We'll be back in a minute. Well, 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here until noon, so you have plenty of time to call in. And Hector's next, but let me talk real quick. Hang on, Hector, about Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. Since 1970, Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, that's Brian and his wife Thelma, have been doing auto repair, light truck maintenance, all kinds of stuff at their Mesa address, which is on Main Street just east of Stapley. They have ASC certified technicians, which means they're certified in the repair work they're going to do. Not only the diagnosis, but all that other stuff. So if you're in Mesa and you don't have a repair shop, then may I suggest Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street just east of Stapley. Hector, how can I help you?
Yes, sir. I have a 01 Nissan Sentra. I cleaned out it's a cable-driven throttle body. I cleaned it out, changed the idle control valve and the TPS, and also I replaced the mass airflow sensor. Now I'm getting a code of P0505 that says it's an auxiliary air control valve circuit malfunction, and I'm at a loss.
Well, tell me what the symptoms are.
It's actually no symptoms and runs like a champ now, runs better than it did before. The check engine light comes on and that code comes up when I read it. I just, other than that, it runs great.
Okay, so let's take the check engine light out of it. If we do that, do you have a symptom then?
No. I when I clear the codes and I drive it around still, still runs really good, actually. So other than that, there's nothing that I can physically feel or see on the car that's wrong with it.
Okay, what year and model is it?
It's an 01 Nissan Sentra.
Okay. Well, you said you replaced the throttle position sensor and cleaned the idle air control motor?
Well, I replaced the idle air control motor, and I cleaned out the throttle body. It's a cable-driven throttle body, and I also replaced the mass airflow sensor.
Okay. Well, you have to synchronize some of that stuff. So you have to set the idle air control motor. Now, did you turn any screws?
You know what? I honestly could not find any screws.
Okay.
I guess I have to check again.
Yeah. Secondary idle air control, it may be simply complaining that you can't guess on what it's saying. You have to go in and look. But it could be saying, I've got air coming in that I expect this car to be going down the road at 30 miles an hour. But it's not, because the speedometer says zero. So I have unmetered air coming into the engine that should be going through the mass airflow sensor that's not. So and it could blame it on the secondary idle air control, but a lot of times the computer is just guessing, and that's what's important, is the code is a guess. And the code just says the problem's in Ohio, and you've got to go find the city and the address and the street number. So in your particular case, I think it's possible, because it's still there, obviously the problem's still there, and you haven't fixed it. I want you to go from the mass airflow sensor to the mouth of the engine, and I want you to look at the bellows. And the bellow is the accordion-looking rubber, you know, thing that's probably 2 or 3 inches in diameter. And I want you to check to make sure there's no cracks in that bellow.
Okay.
And if you do have cracks, then here. You get your glue gun from your wife, and you just run a nice bead across that bellows and close that thing up. This is a temporary fix to see if we hit the nail on the head. So you do that, and then you go drive it. You can clear the codes by pulling the negative cable off, and you have to hop on 1 foot 3 times and yell your wife's name twice. And then you're going to drive it. If we don't have a code and you have hot glued the bellows, you can do... Most guys will just say, okay, I know how to fix that from now on. The women will go buy a new one, then you can do the same.
Okay.
So, but you don't have a scanner. You're just looking at the code. Most of us have a scanner, and we can go in and we can see, oh, the air going in doesn't match the air going out. The air coming in doesn't match the air over here. And so we have the ability to look at numbers, and all this information is numbers. So I'm a little concerned about your throttle position sensor replacement, because we have to synchronize that and the idle. So if an idle air control motor, let's just say for easiness, the idle air control motor has a message of 1 to 10. Let's pretend there. Well, 2 is idle. So we better have 500 RPM or 600 RPM. We better be at idle, and we better be at 2. So we have to synchronize the actual RPM plus the throttle position sensor. Because you changed it, we're going to set that aside for right now. We're going to go after the original symptoms, and then at the end of the day, we'll probably end up synchronizing your idle with your RPM. So that's kind of what. If you need help, what part of town do you live in?
In Queen Creek.
Okay. Thompson's Auto Repair up on Main Street, Stapley, just east of Stapley on Main Street, is certainly capable of diagnosing and repairing that. Now, if you go someplace else, let me just give you a little self-defense. You give them your symptoms, and you ask, how much is the dye charge? Most everybody's going to be $100 to $150, $90 to $150. Beware of the $40 one, because it is my opinion that 90% of the time they call back and ask for more money. And then, of course, you're stuck with them. So most everybody can. Now, if a guy standing at the front counter and he's a little worried that this is an 01 Sentra, he may say, I'm going to say between $100 and $150, so I'll call you at $150, but I won't. If we diagnose it earlier, I'll call you with an estimate. That's kind of how you're supposed to be. The best service advisor is to come up with that kind of plan. Most service writers have the ability to make those decisions on call. So if you have a 1943 Duesenberg and you want to find out where the water leak is, it's going to be a little bit more expensive than a Honda, a Toyota, a Chevy Ford, or a Dodge. And so you can understand the difference. Anyway, Hector, good luck to you. 602-508-0960. We're open. Our lines are wide open, and you're welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. My name is Mark Salem, and every Saturday we're here talking about car and car repair and your symptoms and stuff like that. So that's really how it works.
2 minutes.
Is we talk about symptoms, and we talk about what we can do or what you should do. And really, it's just all about self-defense for car expense. I've owned a shop for 40 years, since 1994, 35 years, call it. And I'm an ASE Master Tech and have been for the last 25 years. And an ASE Master Tech has passed all 8 tests related to the performance of your car from bumper to bumper. They also have school bus tests, and they also have advanced diagnostics, and I have an L1 rating. And so when you move through this, you have technicians that have been certified by an independent certification company, and they've been certified that they've done a good job in answering the questions. No one really knows how many you can miss or how many you're supposed to get because they don't tell you that. It's simply a line in the sand somewhere that says pass or fail. I must confess to you that when I started taking these tests
1 minute
in the mid-90s, I didn't do very well. But then again, that's a long time ago. So anyway, if you'd like to join us and you have a car question, or better yet, if you have a disagreement with your husband or your wife and you want me to be your Judge Judy or your Judge Jerry, then give us a call at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Part of the fun we have here is the give and take. Did you have a symptom? Was it a rough idle? Did the throttle blades, cleaning them, make any difference at all? Those are the kinds of give and take we have, because oftentimes if you say, this is what they did it change anything? No. Did it give you anything? No. Is the light still on? Yes. Then we can talk about what that means. So when we come back, we're going to talk about estimates and how you should be given an estimate and how you shouldn't be given an estimate. Welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and I'm here at your service. We're talking about car and car repair, but let me just clean up some business mess real quick, and that's talk about automatic transmission exchange. Phil's been around a long time. He's been in the same location for a very long time. You can find him at 40th Street in Washington on the north side of the road. He's been there since 1968. He's really good on transmissions. He tells me that he rebuilds far less transmissions than people expect. And he says people come in expecting a transmission overhaul in the thousands of dollars. He says you can't believe how many times they come in and we simply fix a bad wire or fix a bad vacuum line or make an adjustment or replace perhaps a solenoid or something like that. So that's kind of the nifty part of automatic transmission exchange, 40th Street in Washington. Let's go back to the phones. Peggy, good morning.
Good morning. I have a car, Mazda CX-5 2014.
Okay.
And what's happening with it, it's I think an electrical problem or something, but sometimes it'll say, it won't shut off. It'll say turn off engine when I have it already turned off. And other times it'll say put your car in park, or, you know, the little light comes up telling me that. I had it in the shop. They did a diagnostic test, and they drove it around, and it didn't do it for them. And they said that they would really need to see what's going on with it to find out what's causing that. But okay. It does it on and off.
Okay. I want you to do something for me. It seems like that the computer is not seeing that you're getting ready to park the car. So let's pretend like Peggy pulled up at the local liquor store. I'm teasing you, of course.
Yeah.
And you pull
yes,
up,
of course.
And you go to you unbuckle your seatbelt, and you've taken your foot off the brake. But in reality, it hasn't seen you take your foot off the brake. So it's going to tell you put it in park. On the other hand, it could be just the opposite. The brake light switch could be bad, or the connection to the computer from the brake light switch, but it could also be the shifter, and the shifter could be bad. So this is what I want you to try. I want you to become more forceful with the shifter. So when you pull up to Circle K or Safeway or wherever you're going, and is it a column shifter or is it on the floor?
It's on the floor.
Okay. I want you to bang it. You're not going to hurt it, but you're in drive. You pull up to the stops or to the the grocery store, your left foot might very well be on the brake, or maybe your right foot's on the brake. I don't care. And I want you to push the button, and I want you to slam it towards park. Okay, you're not going to break anything, I promise you. So I want you to roughhouse the shifter to see if that makes a difference. Because what they're saying to you is we can't fix or diagnose what doesn't happen in front of us. So you have two choices, right, Peggy. You can wait till it gets better, or we can start guessing with your money. And in this particular case, I think you know that what you need to do, and you know what to watch for. So, but I think if you roughhouse the shifter, or you get in the habit when you pull up to where you're going to stop, you push extra hard on the brake, I think one of those two will change your symptom. Then you can take it back and you can say, this is what's going on, but if I roughhouse the shifter and I take it from drive and I push the button and I kind of throw it forward forcefully, it doesn't do it. So, and if that symptoms analysis, if that process actually works for you, and I'm thinking it will, Peggy, I'm thinking it will. So let me know, okay? Thank you, Peggy. Thank you very much. Dan, you're up next.
Hey, Mark, I have a 2014 Acura ILX, and the brakes groan a little bit when I'm moving really slow and I put the brakes on. And it's not the pads or that. I've changed those, but it just makes a little groaning sound most of the time, not all the time. Any idea?
Well, is it related to the application of your foot on the brake pedal?
Yep.
Okay.
Totally.
Okay. But you say it's not the brake pads for sure?
Nope.
Okay.
Nope, for positive it's not.
How many miles are on it?
56,000.
Okay. Well, did you do the brakes yourself?
1 minute.
Now, that's a leading question, isn't it?
Well, I don't know. I mean,
yeah, I did.
Okay.
Yeah, I did.
Did you use
it? But I've also done my brakes for 40 years, so. And right. And it actually was taking place before I did the brakes.
Okay.
Pat, before they needed to be changed.
Okay. Well, I'm not going to argue with you, and I've seen all kinds of guys that have done all kinds of things in 40 years, but
yeah.
I don't know if you lube the slides for the calipers. I don't know if you put a non-directional finish on the rotors. I don't know if you clean the rust off the back of the rotor where it hits the hub so that the rotor doesn't wobble. I didn't know if you did all those, but that's what the experts do.
You know what? That sounds great, and that sounds like something I need to go back and do.
Okay, but wait. All I want you to do, though, let's make this simpler. Get your wife to drive. And you go passenger front, rear seat right, rear seat left, windows down, teach her how to do it, and try to isolate which corner it's coming from.
Definitely coming from the back. So
okay. Now, how hard is the brake? Is the brake, are you applying it kind of, I'm in a yellow light and I'm going to stop?
Pretty gingerly.
Okay.
Not forcefully at all.
Okay. When you put pads in, did you get new anti-rattle springs?
Yep.
Okay, and you put those in, right?
Yep.
Okay. Check if you know that it's coming from a corner, then gently apply the brakes and forcefully apply the brakes and see if that changes it. Because if it does change it, it's something's loose. At 56,000 miles, I wouldn't expect that you need to replace calipers or backing plates or anything like that at all. I would think that, and you have to grease the slides on the caliper. So when you take the pads out of the caliper, you put the caliper back on and hang it with no pads, and then you grab a hold of the top of the caliper pull and you pull it towards you and you push it away from you, and it should slide with one or two fingers, just like that. If not, and the caliper's tough, then you need to pull the pins and clean them and polish them and lube them.
Okay, They twist back in. There's a tool that you turn them back in. Right?
That's an adjustable piston for your parking brake, and it also takes up some slack. So you take long needle nose pliers and you wind that piston in very carefully until you can fit the two pads and the rotor in there. You're right. It's only going to happen on the rear axle. Alrighty, I got to run. But anyway, Steve, you stay right there because we'll be back right after this. Okie dokie. Let's finish up where we left off, and I'm going to take Steve first, and we've got some business to take care of. Steve, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Hey, morning, Mark.
Good morning.
I've got a 2002
Dodge Durango. And about a year ago, it just driving, you know, 30 miles an hour, you know, surface streets, the thing just started a real violent shake.
Okay.
And it went away. 6 months later, same thing happened. And I mean, it's a really bad shake.
Okay.
And now I can't duplicate it, but it just keeps happening very infrequently.
Okay. I need you to help me get closer than that. So when it starts vibrating, is it you feel it in the steering wheel or in the seat of your pants?
More in the seat of the pants.
Okay.
Like the whole vehicle is shaking.
Okay. And now it'll go on for a while. So we have a couple of other tests that we can run. So you hold your throttle right where it's at, and I want you to just gently apply the brakes, and I want to know if that makes any difference.
It does not. I've done that.
Okay.
Like, apply the brakes. The car starts to slow down, but it's still vibrating badly.
Okay.
Take my foot off the brake. It's still there.
Okay.
Accelerate. Same thing.
Okay. All right. Well, a tire that has a tread separation doesn't come and go. So I'm running
correct.
This through my computer. Your brake application and your brake release didn't have anything to do with it. You're not saying anything about any clicking or knocking noises in the back as you come to a stop and it knocks or you take it off. So this is the easiest thing to do. Do you have a wife? Are you married?
Happily.
Okay, good. She's probably standing right there anyway, so you just chickened out on me.
She's out driving and listening, I'm sure.
Okay. I'm thinking that can you make it happen? Do you know when it's going to happen or something like that?
No, it just comes out of the blue. It's
okay,
is the weirdest thing.
Is it speed related?
No.
Okay.
No, it can happen at 10 miles an hour, 40 miles an hour. This thing hasn't been on the highway in 10 years. It's just a you know, go back and forth to work thing.
Right. Okay. Well, I don't know what it is because this is a very unusual set of symptoms, but I'd start by airing all the tires up to the maximum inflation that's written on the sidewall, which is probably 35 pounds. I might even rotate the tires front to back to see if the problem moves. Definitely check the lug nuts on both of the rears. But one of the things that I would do is I would go out with the technician, and he'd be following me. And that's why I asked you if you had a wife. And you follow her, and if you can figure out how it happens, then all her job is, or your job, whoever's in the tail end car, is to look at the two rear tires and wheels. Did they start wobbling? Is the flat part, the tread part of the tire, all of a sudden look like a big round piece of hose?
I know where you're going with that, Mark. I did take it into a shop and had them keep it a couple of days, and they drove it, and they couldn't make it happen. And they took it out on the highway and all that. They go, this thing drives like a dream. Like, we don't know what you're talking about.
Okay.
Like, guys, this happened.
Okay. You're one of customers that we have all the time. And my answer is we can't fix what isn't there when we're looking. You only have two choices.
Exactly.
Wait till it gets worse or start guessing with your money. So, I mean, did they put it up on the rack? Did they shake the rear wheels?
Yes, they did.
Did they inspect all the tread on all of them? I would have loved it if they would have rotated the tires at the same time they had it up in the air. You say that braking doesn't have anything to do with it? Does steering right, making a hard right turn, a 90-degree right turn, or making a 90-degree left turn, does that change it?
I listen to this show every week. I did all of that.
Okay. Well, obviously, I know, Steve, I can't diagnose it over the radio. I mean, what I'm saying is I'm guessing, I'm giving you all the processes that I know that I would take and we would take, and you're kind of shooting holes in them. So one of us is wrong, and it's probably me. I probably haven't, you know, hit the right thing, but the vibration in the seat of your pants is coming from the back, and it has to be related to a wobble of the wheel or a tire or some shock absorber that's bad, and all of a sudden the following car sees the tires start going up and down. And then when you slow down, the tire stops bouncing because the absence of a shock would let one tire just beat itself to death. But that would also show on the tread because we'd be cupping one of the tires. And if we move that cup tire to the forward position, then all of a sudden we'd have a new feel in the steering wheel. So I still think you should rotate the tires. I still think that's the best thing to do, is to see if the problem moves to the front. If it doesn't move to the front, if it changes things, even for the worst, maybe that's something.
Right. So that's my problem. I can't duplicate the darn thing.
Well, and nobody can fix it if you can't duplicate it. It's like I said. I can't fix what's not there when I'm looking. I can arm you with things to look for. So bad wheel bearings, brake pads, a tire that's got a separation. But see, we have to eliminate tire because Steve says it comes and goes. Now, it might be temperature sensitive. It might be only first thing in the morning when I drive the car to work. Well, the car sat all night long. Maybe there's a big flat spot on one of the rear tires. You said it's in the seat of your pants. I'm saying it has to be in the back because the steering wheel would shake if it was in the front, and the whole car would shake if it's otherwise. So anyway, I'd like you, when you do fix it, to send me an email at mark@marksalem.com and tell me what the heck it is so that I can learn from you as well. But thank you, Steve. Thank you very much. Gil, we got anybody else?
Lines are open.
602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Larry Harker's Automotive has been around since 1967. Bob and Ellen run and operate Larry Harker's Automotive. They offer fast, affordable service, auto electrical work, brake service, auto emissions, vehicle maintenance, but they can really find why your car won't pass emissions. They can really find why when you honk the horn, the windshield wipers start flapping. They can really find when your mother-in-law sits in the passenger seat, the door locks don't work, and when your daughter sits in the passenger seat, the door locks do work. Those kinds of things, they're pretty good at. The bottom line is if you're anywhere near 38th Avenue in Indian School, then Larry Harker's Auto Repair would be someone I would recommend that you have an oil change there just to see how they treat you. That goes for my shop and everybody else's shop. Don't walk in there needing a transmission for $4,000 or $5,000 or an engine that could be anywhere from $4,000 to $15,000. You need to have an oil change or two with them just so you developed a relationship. On another note that's very similar to that, there's a lot of, everybody has computers now. Everybody has computers. So one of the things when we as an industry are faced with is we have somebody come in the door and they've got a problem and they want it, and it's Monday morning or Friday afternoon or during a busy time, and they want somebody to go take them for a ride right now. And this happens to be, and I'll use a stupid example, I honk the horn and the windshield wipers flap. It's oftentimes we'll look into the computer, we'll get your name and stuff or a phone number, and we'll look into the computer, and if you're a customer and you've been a customer for a long time, and in my world, we're at 38,000. So the other day, a gentleman by the name of Jerome, his customer number is 237. 237, and we're at 38,000. And our computer system went online in 1992. Don gets whatever he wants, and he's been around a long time. So it's important to know that when you walk into a shop, if it's a shop you've patronized, that's important, and it should be important to them. If it's a shop that you've never patronized, then be cautious about your demands. That would be something you probably wouldn't want to do. But by the same token, maybe ask them if it's possible, can somebody take a ride? Because I can make it happen. Thank you very much. Who's on the phone?
That would be Gary.
Gary, good morning.
Good morning. My question is kind of information. I have a Buick 2001, 112,000 miles. I took it to my repair shop. They fixed what that was, and that's satisfactory. But I got kind of the typical laundry list of things they recommended, and one of them I don't quite understand.
Okay.
They say the radiator appears to have a cracked tank on the driver's side. And for that, they said $595. So I called back to find out what it was, and what I get was that little plastic tank over there is cracked, but to replace that, they also have to do the radiator. Is that true?
Well, is the plastic tank the overflow jug? or is it... Now, keep in mind, the radiators can oftentimes have metal in the middle, and the tanks on both sides that are attached to the radiator are plastic. But I suspect that this reservoir that's hooked by a small hose to the radiator, that, and it probably has a cap that maybe says, you know, turn it easy because there's pressure. Here's the thing. If it's a plastic part of the radiator has to be replaced. If it's an overflow jug, then that's just flat out BS. I just got to call it the way I see it. If the overflow jug is cracked, it's something that happens all the time. And the overflow jug, to replace it and add a gallon of 50-50 coolant and water, depending on the price of the overflow jug, that's $100 to $175. It just depends on the price of the jug. So, I mean, I have old guys want the jug. We clean it out, pressure wash it for them. They take it home and they use a super glue gun to fix it. Now, if it's a pressurized tank, you don't want to try to fix it. But if you can tell the difference when you look at the cap. That's what's more important. You look at the cap. If the cap just comes off and it's not pressurized, boom, we're done. Most of them are pressurized, so repairs aren't going to really work out. But that's what you have to ask him. Where's this plastic thing? Is it the overflow, or is it actually physically one of the tanks on the radiator? That's what has to ask. The $500 is certainly going to cover an overflow, a tank, the cap on it, and the radiator, and the installation, and the coolant. So I think, like I said, the overflow, $100 to $150 off the top of my head. And I'm always going to bid it high, so I look like a hero. But that's what I would do. You need to know what they're talking about. Open the hood and point it to me. I want to see what you're talking about. So, and if the overflow jug is bad, and they're telling you they got to do the radiator at the same time, I'm calling foul. I'm just calling foul. Okay. I don't care about the 112,000 miles, and I don't care that it's 19 years old. I don't care. I've seen radiators go 200,000 miles. I've seen them fail at 60,000 miles as well. So we can't look into the future. We don't know what's going to happen unless, of course, you come in and you got steel belt hanging out of the front tire. We can say with some confidence, if you don't get that tire change, you're going to end up with a blowout, or you're going to end up on the side of the road needing a tow truck because this tire is not safe for you and your family. So we can look into the future under those kinds of circumstances. But in reality, somebody says, I know your transmission is going to fail in the next 10,000 miles. I think we ought to put that $8,000 dog in yours, new one in yours. that just doesn't hold water. If they knew what was in the future, they'd go to Las Vegas, and when the casino opened, they'd bet big money on whatever the number it is, and they would be rich, and they wouldn't be fixing cars. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. My name's Mark Salem. We got another hour of this fun and frivolity, so if you want to hang around, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're going to be here for another hour. Every Saturday, we're here from 10 to noon, and we talk about car repair. We talk about your problems, your car, and it's a kind of a give and take. I ask a question, you answer me. Now, when you answer me, it's one of three answers. Yes, no, or I don't know. I don't know is okay. If you don't know, you don't know. But if you say it's right and you really don't know, then I go in the right turn, and chances of me guessing intelligently are pretty slim. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Kurtz Auto Repair. Kurtz is proud to be an independent, family-owned, and operated auto repair facility. They were just recognized recently as one of the Better Business Bureau Ethic Awards winners, and that says a lot. They've been in business since 1987. They've been working on domestic imports, both gas and diesel. They have ASE Master and Certified Technicians, which means they're going to be... Your car is going to be diagnosed and repaired by guys that have been around the block. Kurtz Auto Repair is at I-17 and Bell Road in Phoenix. It's a good shop. If you need one in that area, Kurtz is the guy. Let's go to the phone. Steve, good morning.
Good morning. I've got a 2004 Hyundai Tiburon. I have an issue. I'm supposed to be checking the purge valve. Troubleshooting. Haven't been able to... have any difference in the you know, troubleshooting is, the problem is that when I get gas, the car hesitates on a restart about 80% of the time. It's just real sluggish, it doesn't want to restart right away, that it chokes. Haven't seen any difference between filling it to half, three-quarter, or full. Didn't seem to have any noticeable difference in the whether trouble restarting or not. Doesn't seem to have a problem if cars are sitting stopped. If I just open the gas cap for a while and put it back on, doesn't seem to make a difference. And one other thing I noticed recently was that I was trying to do some checking on it, and I opened the gas cap when the car was running, and it sounded like the tank was boiling. It sounded like air bubbling in. You know, is that normal?
Well, let's back this train up a long way.
Okay.
It's you know codes, right? No check engine lights, no codes.
Yeah, right.
Okay. And it only this malady only happens after you fueled it up.
Yes.
Okay. And where did you get purge valve? You mentioned that at the beginning.
Called in a long time ago with the similar problem. We haven't gotten down to Thompson's to have them check the thing.
Okay. It's you've put me in a tough situation. Let me change the story and every single time we see black smoke out of the tailpipe or we have a tough start after fuel up, especially if we say, okay, hold it to the floor. If you know what's going to happen, hold it to the floor, crank it till she starts, and look in your rearview mirror and see if you see black smoke. Every time those particular circumstances, then what's happening is we're pumping fuel too fast in the tank. But basically what we're talking about is there's a device at the top of the tank that's supposed to suck the fumes, go through a canister, and the motor's supposed to consume the fumes. So the system should really be airtight. What happens is like my father, my dad used to stuff the tank. That would send liquid fuel forward. The car would be then flooded, and he'd always complain and use bad words because his car wouldn't start. So what I did is I pinched off the line on the top of the tank. And I said, try that for a couple times. And he goes, you fixed it. And I said, no, I need to fix you. Because I pinched off the tank, which prevents that pressurized fuel from going forward and so forth and so on. You could do the same thing. You could go down there and find out which purge valve line's pulling off the top of the tank. There's always a possibility that I'm wrong. But here's the thing. It doesn't happen when the tank is half to empty. And so then we have to look at half to full. And what I hear you saying, it's really 7/8 to full. And it's predominantly after you fill it up with water. I'm trying to dance as clearly as I can. But let me just tell you an analysis. We had a bad water leak up at the ranch the other day. And you turned on the south side faucet and it flooded the laundry room with water. An inch or two. So we called the plumber up, and he goes, blah, blah, blah. And we have these frost-free faucets up there because it gets down in single digits. And you're supposed to disconnect the hose because the hose, if you don't disconnect the hose, it holds that whole system in full of water, and then when the water freezes, it blows your pipe up. So the guy comes down, and he says, show me where you're at. And he goes, okay, well, I'm sure it's broken. It's split. So we sat there, and we argue. And I said, there's never been a hose connected to this. Never, 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 never. And he goes, okay, Mr. Salem, okay, well, maybe it's a bad fitting. So he takes the wall apart. And this thing has a split in it. You could have stuck a quarter through. And I'm saying to him, there's never been a hose on this. It's in an area at the backside of the laundry room that we got hose bibs on either side of it. Well, he's sitting there smiling, and I know why he's smiling. And then I say to him, I'm probably doing what everyone else has done and swear there's never been a hose. And he didn't even turn his back to me, but I could see his shoulders shaking. I go, okay, enough said. So I don't know what to tell you, but if you want to see if there's a problem in the purge system, then have somebody go up there and pinch that purge line. Another thing you could do is find the canister and take it out and see if it's dripping with fuel. It's not supposed to be dripping with fuel. It's supposed to just bring fumes off the tank and burn them again. So you could have a bad purge valve. You could. The problem is the purge valve is going to suck fume off the tank, and the only time it's going to get liquid is if you stuff the tank, the tank's real full, and then you start driving left turns and right turns, that vacuum cleaner up on the top of the tank is going to suck liquid. So I don't know what to do, but I think for your sake, maybe have your shop just pinch off the fuel line. And you can get a vacuum diagram, if you want, off the Internet, and you're going to follow from the canister to the purge valve on top, and then you'll be able to know where it ends up and finalizes underneath the hood, and then you look at the lines. There might be three of them. There'll be a small one, a middle one, and a big one, and you should be able to just pinch that off. Now, it's going to set a code when you do that, but that's the way it is. Anyway, Steve, good luck to you. Good luck to you. David, you're up next. How can I help you?
Actually, David dropped, so we're going to go to Alex.
Alex, good morning.
Thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
So I was just wondering if this is normal when I turn my car into the run position for the condenser and the radiator fan to both turn on automatically. I have a 95 Toyota Camry, and I couldn't tell you perfectly if it had not done that in the past, but from what I remember, it wouldn't do that, and, you know, the radiator fan would kick on, you know, after the car would start to heat up, condenser fan would kick on when I would turn the AC on. And now they're just on all the time. So I just don't know if that's normal.
Okay. This time of the year, it's not kind of normal. If you park the car and come back to it 10 minutes later, the water in the engine is hotter than the water in the radiator. So when you start it up, the thermostat's already open, and we're gonna start flowing that water. What I hear you say is you have two fans. One of them is an AC fan, and one is a cooling system fan. And more than likely, the AC fan comes on with the cooling system fan or vice versa, depending on how it's wired, and I can't tell you on a 95 Camry. But if they come on when you hit the key, are they on for the entire trip, wherever you're going?
Yes, the entire time until I shut the car off.
Okay. Has anybody done any work underneath the hood in a while?
Yeah, I worked on my own car. The last thing that I had done, What did I do? I changed a fuel filter. I did change the radiator. Okay. So I did disconnect both of those fans. The last thing that I really did under the hood, though, was I got some electronic cleaner. And I went through some electrical connections because it was the first time I had done it. I didn't want to mess anything up, so I was just kind of testing it out. And I went and I sprayed some electrical connections. I did spray the connections on one of the fans. Not both of them, because the other one was a little difficult to get to, and I didn't feel like getting it to it because I was just trying it out. So that was the last thing I had done.
Okay, now, so this electrical cleaner is an aerosol spray, I'm going to assume?
I think it's called QD, electronic cleaner. I got it at O'Reilly.
Okay, so is it something that goes in and cleans the connection and then evaporates, or is there a residual after effect? It's kind of like spraying it with WD-40 and it still has a residual after effect. Is it? Because electrical cleaners typically are kind of like hairspray. You spray them on, they dry real quick. They clean the connection,
right,
they dry
yeah.
real quick. Is that yours, or is it leave a little bit of a residual?
Yeah, it evaporates immediately.
Okay. All right. I'm going to guess here, but I'm quite sure the cooling fan for your engine, forget the AC fan, the cooling fan of your engine is going to be controlled by the computer, and when the computer sees a temperature it doesn't like, there's probably a hot lead to the fan, and the computer has the ground. And so when it wants the cooling system fan to fire up, it just grounds that wire. And then we're done.
Right.
The air conditioning fan is going to be hooked to the air conditioning system, and it's either going to be wired to come on when the compressor comes on, or there's going to be a high-pressure switch on the compressor that turns that second fan on. Now, sometimes, and especially in the older cars that you're talking about, your Camry, sometimes one fan is connected to the other. So you turn on the air, and all of a sudden both fans come on. And they're saying, okay, when we turn on the air, the motor's going to run hotter, plus we want airflow across the condenser that's that big radiator in front of the radiator. So a lot of times on the older model cars, we fired up both fans. Well, if that's the case, that high side switch in the compressor is the same as the other one. I feed power to the fan, and then I ground it. Well, maybe that high-pressure switch at the back of the compressor is grounded, and it's faking everything out, and by grounding, it turns on both fans because it thinks the air's on when it really isn't on.
1 minute.
So the diagnostic process would be get a wiring diagram and find out how it works. And if I'm right, then you disconnect the high pressure wire from the compressor, and the problem goes away. And the problem is both fans are running, or both fans come on when you start it up. Well, then that goes away. So if that's the case, then more than likely the high pressure switch at the back of the air compressor is bad, and it's telling the fans, I'm going to turn both of you on because I see high pressure in the air conditioning system. Well, there is no high pressure in the air conditioning system, especially if you start it up. This is going to be one of those things that's going to cost probably $100 to $200, because you've got multiple circuits you have to check to find it, and under the best of conditions, half that much money to fix it. Because this is going to be one of those, is when you find it, when you know what it is, then fixing it's not going to be nearly as expensive as finding it was, because you have three different circuits. And so you have to deal with all three of those. So that's the best I can do. Good luck to you, Alex. And the lines are open, 602-508-0960. Got five lines open. Gil's the one. He's the engineer that makes me look good. He also uses bad words to me during the break when I don't hit my brakes. Like right now, I'm 25 seconds past that. But he's a really nice guy, and we've worked together, and we're kind of like different brothers, brothers from different mothers. We'll be back.
Hello.
Minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here every Saturday, 10 to noon, talking about cars and car repair stuff. Action Auto Repairs at I-17 in Deer Valley. I've known Tom since probably the early 80s. He's a full-service, family-owned auto repair shop. He has no affiliation with any kind of a specific car, but he works on everything from BMWs to Mercury Zephyrs. So whatever repairs you need, and most of the time I suggest that you go in for an oil change and just see how they treat you. See if they call you out and say, here's an issue that you've got. This one you need to address as soon as possible, and here's why. But this one over here, you can wait however long you want. But this is something that you need to have, and I'm going to go ahead and give you estimates for both of them. And thank you. I'll meet you back in the lobby. That's what happens. Low pressure, show and tell, develop trust, and be done with it. Tom has ASE Master Certified Technician. Like I said, he's been around a long time. He's Action Auto Repair at I-17 and Deer Valley. Tom, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
Earlier caller talking about wheel shake and all that.
Uh-huh.
I had that issue too. Could it be the weights and stuff? It could move around or lost the weight.
Well,
could that cause the shimmy in the wheels?
Well, the one that I think you're referring to is the guy that had a vibration in the back of the car. And he said I can't really remember. It was an O2 Durango. The answer about the weights moving around in the tire, that is certainly true a long time ago. In 1968, when I was balancing tires and working at a Shell station in Tempe, yes. If I pounded the weights too hard, they would come off. But a quarter of an ounce to a half an ounce to three-quarter of an ounce and maybe even an ounce isn't going to really make a vibration significant enough. But if you throw a 2.5-3 ounce weight, then the answer is yes. So in addition to that, the weights from today are far better than the weights from before. The machines are completely different. The Fred Flintstone machine that I was born and raised on in 1968 all the way till probably 1980 was a bubble machine. Today we have balancers that divide the tire in half for left side, right side. Then it also divides the tire sideways in virtually every point in the clock. So it then tells you the high side of the heavy side of the tire is on the heavy side of the wheel. So I want you to take the air out of this and move the heavy side 180 degrees difference from where it's at. So the heavy side of the wheel is at 12 o'clock and the heavy side of the tire is at 6 o'clock. And at the end of the day, we use like a half an ounce of weights or maybe an ounce of weights to finish the balance. So it's telling us how to clock the tire to the wheel. But yes, every once in a while you'll find weights, but I want to tell you, I don't remember in the last 5 years where somebody came in with a vibration that we found that they had thrown a weight. So back in the old days, yes, but I don't remember ever seeing that in the last 5 years at my shop. So thank you for bringing that up. That's a great question, and that's something that we hear every once in a while is, will you check my tire balance? I think I threw a weight. And yes, we will. If we balanced them before, yes, we'll do that at no charge. But there has to be more conversation after that. You know, when did it start? Does it come and go? Is it hot or cold, fast or slow? Those are the kinds of questions that typically done. But thank you, Tom. That's a good thing for us to talk about. I'm not the perfect guy, and my shop isn't the perfect place. We make mistakes like everybody else. If your shop makes a mistake, you're going to find out how much they value you as a customer. Not too long ago, a friend of mine who owned a shop said he fired a customer. And I said, wow, I have too sometimes, but tell me about yours. And so he went on through this long story, and he says, you know, with computers today, we can make notes, and we start with the date, and just date after date after date after date in the customer's files, and unhappy about this, and couldn't please him here, and all that kind of stuff. So I said, well, what did you do? And he goes, well, I just decided I would do what you do. And I said, oh, I'm not liking the answer to this question. And he goes, when he came in last, I tripled the estimate for the repair. And obviously he was really mad at me, and I'm hoping he doesn't ever come back. And I said, will you run the risk of him telling everybody in the world that you're really, really expensive? And he goes, what has changed in the last 10 years? He says, every shop is blamed for being expensive. And I said, yeah, you're right, because folks don't really know the dynamics. So the end of this story is, number one, it's true that there has been times that I've given a huge estimate to somebody who has just been somebody that takes too much of our time and has us chasing our tails and then complains and complains and complains. A better way to handle it that I have figured out, and so has a lot of other shops, is to give you a number that includes everything. We talk to our customers like this. Write your check for this much money before you leave home, and that will take care of the bill. That's all there is to it. You're not going to come in and we're going to hit you for 20% more of your ticket, $80 on a $400 ticket, 20% more because we have shop supplies, environmental charges, and sales tax. We all have computers. We can build the repair right on the computer, and it'll give us a perfect number at the end. So we give you that number. Now, if we need more money, we call. But on the other hand, if we're under, then they write the check and you give them the difference. That simple. Most people like it that you're going to say, this is the amount you write your check for. And, of course, nobody writes checks anymore, but you're driving the point home. There are also times, maybe once a year, where a shop finds it necessary to just disassociate themselves with a customer. The last one I remember, which is 2 or 3 years ago, was a guy who told us how to fix his car. And it got to the point where the argument wasn't worth it. What we didn't anticipate was, he says, I want you to balance all my tires. I've got a bad vibration. Or just, I want to balance all my tires. So we do that. He's got the steering wheel of his train. He's telling us what to do. Balance my tires. Then he comes back and he goes, well, it didn't fix it. And then you say, we didn't fix anything. We did what you told us. I didn't tell you. I told you to fix the vibration. No, here's the work order. Mr. Salem said, balance the tires. ...LG, which is the initials of the person at the front counter. No, that's what you said. That's exactly what you said. So he was really mad at us and demanded that we go diagnose it for free. And I ended up hearing all the commotion down the lobby. I came downstairs and I already knew him and said, you know, we're just not made for one another. You know, there's lots of shops around here. And I think it's time for you to find another shop that can meet your needs better than we can. And so I'm going to go ahead and close your customer file. If there's any warranty issues of work that we've done before, then we'll certainly honor those. But I really think it's time for you to move on. He was nice and said thank you, and he walked out the door. As soon as he walked out the door and he was over to his car, which is quite a ways from the front door, the entire lobby is now filled with staff, and they're clapping. I said, I know this has been a problem, but you're making it sound like it's a bigger problem. And they go, you aren't always here. We deal with that guy all the time. So, and ironically enough, it's most of the time it's a guy. the ladies will oftentimes come in and tell us what their son in Minnesota told them to say. And it just with a little bit of questioning, you can get there. And so you ask for the symptoms and, if necessary, the guy's phone number so you can have a discussion. So women rarely tell us how to fix their car. They rarely tell us that the guy on the internet said that the mass airflow sensor is wrong because the code says it's wrong, which is a bunch of hogwash. So it is a communication issue. Most of you have been at your shop for a long time. That means they love you. And I hope that's the case. A couple of you may have been fired by your shop, and I think the writing's on the wall. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here helping you with your car-related problems. The phone number is 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. Auto Dynamics has been around in Sun City for a very long time. Chuck Nide opened up Auto Dynamics in 1982. His son, Derek, now works there as well. Family-owned and operated since 82. They're proud of the quality service they provide. They stand behind the work that they do. Their staff and mechanics are not paid a commission or a percentage of your repair bill. Therefore, they're not motivated to sell unnecessary parts or repairs. So if you're in Sun City, Auto Dynamics, north side of Grand, just west of 99th Avenue, is a good place to start. Gil, any callers? We got one.
Yes, we got one. Its name is Don.
Don, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Another brake issue. I have an 01 Sonoma GMC, the four-cylinder. Anyway, the brakes in wet weather on the first drive in the morning when I first apply the brake, it grabs so hard it almost throws me through the windshield. Then the next two or three successive times, it gets better and better. I've learned in wet weather after to ride the brakes in first gear for a couple hundred feet until they evidently dry out or something. Then they work just fine. And during wet weather, in a rainstorm or whatever, they work normally. They don't grab real hard. It's just after it sits.
Okay.
And for a while, and I guess they dry out. But the first couple of applications are severe, you know.
Okay.
You've given me
some great information. And I think what's going on, and I don't know why, it's got to be something in the environment. There's two things that could be happening. We've got water contamination of the rotors, and that will cause what you describe. And that will also, when you ride the brakes, you're using the brake pads as a squeegee. You're removing the water, and everything's fine. Or the other possibility is that your brake rotors are rusting. And you say it's related to water and rain, and that certainly is it. That does happen. And so you rust up the wheels, and the first time you hit the brakes, it's kind of like sandpaper hitting the pads. They're smooth, so there's an abruptness to it. But after you apply the brakes two or three times, then it's gone because you've removed all the rust.
Right.
It's not uncommon. I remember we used to park an old truck we used to use for, you know, doing stuff at the ranch or whatever, and it sometimes would be over near the barn, and there was a depression in the barn. The guys used to complain that they had to walk through standing water to get to the truck, but they also complained that the brakes didn't work, and one equals two. So I gave them some galoshes, and I put duct tape over their mouth and told them to go get in the truck and get the heck out of here. So here's what I want you to try, though. When you know it's going to happen and it's been raining or something like that, I want you to go in reverse. And go however, you know, if you could do two or three car lengths, then jam on the brakes. Mm-hmm. And then go drive forward and see what happens. What you're doing is you're obviously squeegeeing the water off the rotors. The fact that they work fine after you clean them up would suggest that there is no oil. There is no contamination issue other than water. So I'm a little unclear why you're 01 would have that unless, has it ever been wrecked before?
No.
Okay, have you owned it since it was new?
Yeah.
Okay. Next time it goes in for a tire rotation, I would ask the shop, Would you check to make sure all the splash guards in and around my wheel are present? And
water getting in there. It works fine while they're wet. It doesn't make any difference if I squeegee off the water. It's just after it's been sitting. And
okay.
I don't understand how it could rust that quickly or whatever, you know?
Well, you know, I don't have an answer for that. That's the difficult part.
Yeah.
And of course, we have a set of symptoms that are certainly valid, but we can answer that question after you fix the problem. So what you can do is you can look through the wheel and see the rotors. So why don't you tomorrow night, take a garden hose and just saturate the rotors through the wheels. Mm-hmm. Then tomorrow morning before you drive it, see if there's any rust on them. Now, there's going to be guys out there that say, well, you're buying cheap rotors from Japan or China or Indonesia. I'm not going to jump on board to that train. Because I know that many of the parts that are installed in brand new parts come from offshore manufacturers. But there's always a possibility that you have some metal in your rotor that isn't conducive to a normal finish and perhaps rust more.
Yeah.
But I'm not suggesting you go replace the rotors. I'm suggesting that we determine, if you can determine what to do to make this go away, that will go a long ways towards the repair.
Uh-huh.
So that's
they're the original rotors. They're American, I guess.
Yeah.
Unless GM gets parts from China.
No, they do.
Yeah.
There's no such factory that makes General Motors rotors or brake pads or windshield wipers or seats or anything. Keep in mind, my truck was made in Mexico, but it was assembled there, and it wasn't manufactured there. So the parts come from all over the world. And as a result of that, my truck is assembled with parts from all over the world. Let me tell you this. The new Model 4 trucks, all their fuel controls is from Denso, which is a shortened name for what they used to be called, Nippon Denso. And then you have Hitachi. Oh, Denso does the rotating electrical for starters and alternators. You have Hitachi on the fuel controls. You have Bendix brakes, and you have belts from somebody else. And all of this stuff comes from somewhere else. So don't get wrapped up in the, I need to have brake rotors for an 01 Sonoma, because they never were associated other than the manufacturer buys from the cheapest vendor, and that's all there is to it. Anyway, Don, thank you for calling. 602-508-0960. We've got lines open if you'd like to join us. There's five.
Take the Patriot.
Welcome back, everybody. 37 minutes, actually 43 minutes after the top of the hour. My name's Mark Salem. Let me tell you real quick that there's a lot of people out there that I respect that have better knowledge and better experience than I have. I'm not the most perfect know-it-all kind of guy. I do my best, and I do fix things more than others. But here's the difference between me and them. Number one, I've been doing radio since 1988 in Phoenix. And number two, they're scared to death to do radio. And there's a big difference there. But one of the guys that's not scared to do radio is Nate from Strictly Diesel Service and Repair. I really respect Nate. He is really a smart diesel guy. He knows diesels better than I do. He's way up north and I'm way down south, so we don't really struggle with customers. But there are times that I say, go talk to Nate at Strictly Diesel, I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road. You can also go to their website. You can leave information there and look at some of the products they sell. So that's Strictly Diesel, and Nate is the guy that runs it. Let's go to Jim. Jim, good morning.
Good morning. I have a 2010 Dodge Ram, 5.7. Check engine light came on about a month ago, and it stayed on. Well, it went on and off periodically, and now it stayed on. And by me shifting, you know, there's a little knob at the end of the shifter.
Overdrive.
Okay, but there's like five.
Okay.
Different selections. Okay. I messed with that, and it went away for like 2 weeks.
Okay.
But it's back on now.
Okay, there's there's a rocker switch on your shifter, and you can push the bottom of it all the way down to first gear, and you can drive, and then you can click the top, and it goes to second, and then third. Are we talking about the same thing?
No, it's not a rocker switch. It's actually a knob at the very end of the shifter.
Okay. Okay.
You can go through 2, 5. Yeah, but if I mess with that, or, you know, you shift it manually.
Okay. So,
then
so with
it
this,
went away. I don't know.
Okay. With this shifter knob, you can actually put it in 1, and it won't shift into 2. So if you're kind of climbing or you're.
That's correct.
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. Fair enough. I just needed to know that it's a selector for shift. I don't have an answer for you. I just don't have an answer, but I tell you what I would do if I were you. I would start manually shifting that thing for a week. I just, you know, start off in first gear, and that's what I'd do for a week. Let's put it in some ranges in the transmission that it hasn't been before. How many miles do you have on that?
88,000.
Okay. I can't possibly, but if you needed transmission work, I'd be very surprised. 88,000 is not the normal that I expect to see. Transmissions north of 150 is typically when we see them. And I'll roll that down to 130. 130 north of that. In your particular case, you can help yourself by trying to determine how I can make it happen. And if it does it all the time, that way when you take it to the shop, you can say, this is what I need to do. You can take it down to Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th and Washington. If you can duplicate it, can you make it happen? Can you learn how to make it happen? Because if you can do that, you're going to save yourself $100 guaranteed in diagnostic fees.
Okay. I just can't turn it off anymore.
Yeah.
And I did that once, and I think that was just fluke, maybe. I don't know.
Well, you could, if you wanted to, you could, if you know it happens, then go back home, disconnect the battery, wave it in the air for 10 seconds, put it back on, and see what happens. That's called a reboot. So you're basically saying clear the memory of all the electronics and we'll start over again. So you could try that. That would help, but that's the best I can do. I'm sorry. Well, good luck to you. And again, Jim, if you do fix it and it's weird, mark at marksalem.com. I'd sure like to hear about it so I can learn from you. Tony, you're up.
Yes, good morning.
Yeah.
I have I bought this vehicle brand new. Got 115,000 miles on it. It's a 2004 Chevy Silverado with a 5.3 in it.
Okay.
Got the trailer package for towing, transmission, cooler, and so forth, positive traction.
Okay.
I get a little drop of oil on the driveway every now and then. I jacked it up and looked underneath. There's a film of oil over my starter.
Okay.
Now, I've taken it to the dealer, and he says it's a rear main.
Okay.
Well, I don't see anything around the drain plug or anything. The car is, I mean, the pan, everything's dry except for that film over the starter.
Okay.
And I'm wondering if there's anything above there, like some kind of a sending unit that might be leaking. Can you give me any idea?
Yeah, you're right. The back of the intake manifold gasket can leak, but it usually drops on the bell housing and goes on both sides of the bell housing. And and yes, there could very well be an oil pressure switch in there, but I can tell you right now, that oil pressure switch is bad. You ain't going to just have a drip. You're going to have something the size of a dollar bill. Because when it leaks, it's got pressure. When you shut it off, it relieves the pressure and it's going to drip. I think, and I'm in a tough position here because I'm going to have to stick up for the guy that I don't know who he is. I think it's possible that underneath between the transmission and the engine is a dust cover. And I think it's possible that they took the dust cover off and they could look up in front of the torque converter and see the rear main seal area.
Yes, and, he did that.
Okay, then that's valid. Then your next question is Mark, if this was your truck and you get a drip every so often, what would you do? And my answer is nothing. What happens if this is your wife's truck, Mark? What would you do? Nothing. What happens if it's your grumpy dad's truck? Nothing. I wouldn't do anything. I just would. Now, if you want to find out where it's at, spend the money and go have somebody put dye in it. You go drive it, and then they'll come back with a black light, and they'll be able to follow the drip to its origination point. But I think that's a huge waste of time. You got to drip every once in a while. Forget it.
Yeah.
Forget. And after all, let's take 115,000 miles and divide it by 16 years, and it's not like you're driving the wheels off this thing.
No.
Have you ever taken it to Tucson or anything?
No. This thing, the bed looks like the day it came out of the factory. I've never had a load. I just use it for transportation.
Okay.
And I change oil every 3,000.
Okay.
Now, I will say, I'm not going to do anything until something goes bad.
Yeah. Now, but do you have any grandsons?
What? Pardon?
Do you have any grandsons?
I got 23 great. I'm 86 years old.
All right. This is silly as it sounds. I'm quite sure that you're not out there exercising the throttle more than 30%. It's kind of like a horse that's been in the stall his whole life. And so you take him out and you don't run him at full speed, but you kind of walk him and then walk him a little faster and then get him into a trot and then you get him into a kind of a gallop and then you get him running full blast and then you back off. We need to go through heat cycles. We need to heat up and cool down. Heat up and cool down. I think you're driving close by. You're going to the liquor store for your wife. You're not warming it up. Everything hasn't seen heat in a very long time. Why don't you take your wife to Flagstaff and spend the night at Little America and come home and see what that oil leak is like? But for right now, you haven't given me enough information that makes me believe that you should spend a dime more than this. I think you should leave it the heck alone and move on with your life. Okay? And if you want somebody to drive it hard, call me and I'll come over and get it.
Okay, one more quick one.
Okay.
I used to use a certain brand, quality brand, and I couldn't find the same thing, the same brand had turned into a turbo oil for turbo. So I use it uses a 530, so I bought it. And, man, it just went through there like a dose of salt.
Okay.
So I went back to another oil that I used to love way even back in high school. Is it okay if I tell you what it is?
You can move to any oil you want.
I went to Valvoline.
Okay.
And so that slowed down. And I use about a 3/4 a quart in 2,500 miles. And I don't see any smoke when I start. I always warm it up. I give it at least 4 or 5 minutes.
Okay.
And I don't see any smoke coming out. I don't see. And there's no slimy oil in the exhaust pipe.
Okay. So, Tony, I got to go. But let me just tell you something. Your engine's not smart enough to know if you put Quaker State or Valvoline or Pennzoil or Chevron. It's not. It doesn't care. If the weight is the same and you're having an oil consumption problem with Jones and you move to Smith and it changes it, then just stay with Smith. That's all there is to it. But I got to run, Tony. I got two other callers. John, you're up next.
Thank you, Mark. Hello. I have a 2001 Chevy Astrovan 4.3. I went to the Free Whisker Kid down on the road and got a code red. Oxygen sensor, which I'm not worried about. And then a thermostat said it wasn't closing or whatever type of deal.
Okay.
Would those two be interlinked? So if I don't get that engine hot enough that my O2 sensor is not picking up the code that it's, or the, you know, the electrical...
No.
Juice that it's supposed to be?
No. They're too independent. We wake up the oxygen sensor with exhaust heat. So it starts looking at your exhaust and the abundance of oxygen or the lack of oxygen. That's why it's called an oxygen sensor. So an oxygen sensor, we look at it with a scanner. Not with a code, but a scanner. And we make it run rich, and the oxygen sensor better go 5. And we make it run lean, and the oxygen sensor better go 1. And so if we're driving it around and it sticks at 1 or it sticks at 5, I want it at 2.5. So the oxygen sensor's lying. The oxygen sensor is old. Not that I suggest that we get rid of all the old people like me, but
I'm older than you, brother.
Okay. All right. And then the T-stat. This is easy. The T-stat's easy. That's really easy.
Yeah. I'm going to knock that out.
No. We're going to diagnose it right. All right. In the morning, you take the radiator cap off. You have the wife start the car and bring the idle up to about 1,000 RPM, okay? Mm-hmm. I want the water in the radiator to just ripple. I don't want to see movement. If that thermostat is stuck open, then you're going to have instant flow from the top hose into the radiator, and you're going to see water flowing from where the cap is. There won't be any pressure first thing in the morning, so the vibration of the engine will cause the water to ripple, but you won't see it flowing. Now, it is crucial that we have the right thermostat in there because we need the car to run at 220. But let's make sure that's it. Let's just make sure. But there is no relationship between the thermostat and an O2 sensor, but got to run. And Mark at MarkSalem.com, if anybody wants to continue the conversation, Mark at MarkSalem.com, and give me your phone number so I can call you, because I hate to type. Glenn, you're up. How can I help you?
Actually, Glenn hung up. This is another John.
Oh, John, I'll take you. How can I help you?
Yeah, I got a 96 Buick Regal with 100,000 miles on it, and the air conditioning on it, it has a leak in it, and it's been filled up like 4 or 5 times. And the last time I took it to somebody, they filled it up, said they couldn't find a leak, which is what everybody says, and then he said, come back and we'll diagnose it if it runs out. Well, we ran it for the summer, and then when we tried to turn it on back this year for the hot weather, no air conditioning.
Okay,
again.
All right. I don't agree that we wait till it gets out and then we're going to diagnose it. That's BS. Today we have all kinds of fancy dyes, yellow, blue, green, red. We inject the dye into the system. We bring the Freon level up, and nobody can see the dye until you put these funky glasses on. And once you put these funky glasses on, then you can see the dye.
2 minutes.
So we're going to go to every fitting from the firewall forward, and then we're going to drop a camera into the condenser, which is behind the glove box, and we're going to see the dye. That's all there is to it. So this old-fashioned idea that, and I'm disturbed with our industry when I hear you saying that they just keep adding refrigerant to it. Come on, guys. Get into the 21st century here. We have the ability to find those problems with. So I'm going to inject dye into your air conditioning system. I'm going to have you drive it. I'm going to bring you back in a month. I'm going to put these funky glasses on. I've got a special light. I'm going to start waving this light around, and pretty soon, oh, look at that. It's all red right there. Well, you can't see it with the naked eye, but I can with my glasses and my light. So find somebody that has a shop that has the ability to install dye. Ask them what the process is, how much does it cost, and how often do you want to see me? Most of us say, bring it in every 30 days. We'll give it a good look over. We'll figure out where it's leaking. The number one place it leaks is at the Schrader valves. That's the number one place it leaks. You take the cap off the Schrader valve, whoo, there's red dye everywhere. So the Schrader valves are often a problem, and I would say 30% of the time the Schrader valves. And to replace them, you have to take all the refrigerant out, and then you replace the Schrader valves, and then you put the refrigeration back in. We have the ability to pull yours, clean it up, and put it right back in. If you're 4 ounces low, we charge you 4 ounces, plus the labor. So we only have to charge you what you need. Mark at MarkSalem.com, Mark at MarkSalem.com, Mark at MarkSalem.com. If you want to continue the conversation, I'm happy to do that with you. Make sure you give me your phone number so that I can call you. I'm going to call from my blocked line, so it's going to come through as a block. But it's going to say, this is Mark Salem, and hopefully you won't hang up on me.